All right, good morning. I'd like to call the House Education Committee to order. Today is April 5th, I believe. Yes, let the record reflect the time is 8:02 a.m. Today we have present Representative Story, Representative McKay, Representative Hemshute, and myself, Co-Chair Ruffridge. So we do have a quorum to conduct business, and please, committee members and those in the audience, silence or turn off your cell phones. Staff assisting us today, Linda with House Records and Susan with the LIO. Welcome. And Bud Sexton is the committee aide today if you need anything. Today we have just one item on the agenda, and that is the continuation of HB 202 from Representative Johnson, opioid overdose drugs in schools. Also like to welcome Representative McCormick this morning. Today we have staff to Representative Johnson, Savea Bieber. Please approach the table. And we are here today to hear essentially invited testimony. Invited testifiers that we have online today are Dr. Randy Traney from the Mat-Su School District, Superintendent, and Roy Getchell, Superintendent of the Haynesboro School District, and Teresa Welton from the Department of Health. Ms. Bieber, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record and then just give us a very brief reintroduction to HB 202, and we'll start with invited testimony.
Good morning. For the record, Savea Bieber, staff to Representative Johnson, through the chair. HB 202 requires each school district to ensure a person who is trained to administer naloxone is on site when the main school building is open to the public during school-sponsored events and weekend activities on or off school grounds and on school buses. It also requires the main school buildings to keep at least two doses of naloxone on site and at least one dose at school-sponsored events and on buses while students are being transferred.
Thank you, Ms. Bieber. And also for the record, we are joined by Representative Prox at 8:04 a.m. So we do have online today Dr. Traney from the Mat-Su School District for invited testimony. Dr. Traney, if you'd like to introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm Randy Traney, the superintendent from the Mat-Su Borough School District. And we think that this is important legislation, and it's something that we've largely embraced in the Mat-Su already. We have staff members at each of our buildings who are trained to deliver the naloxone nasal spray. Additionally, that the school nurses, but also front office staff, because not all schools have school nurses. We have multiple doses on site at each building. So we're generally supportive of this bill. We do have some concerns with the wording. I understand the intention, you know, is to try to have this available as much as possible, but the way it's currently phrased, like whenever the school building is open to the public, practically our buildings are open to the public, you know, almost 24 hours a day. So we have community use groups that use the building all the time. So let's just take an example like Cub Scouts or Girl Scouts or a church group. And they may use the facilities, you know, at any time of the day, night, or weekend. Currently, the way it's written, we think that then we would be required to have somebody trained on site every time that occurs. And there could be multiple groups across multiple buildings. Similarly, with buses, the bus drivers are not our employees, and it's not in our contract with Durham. In fact, the way it's currently worded, we specifically ask bus drivers not to do anything that might be construed as dispensing medication. We would have to renegotiate that. I'm sure it would come with a cost. So I understand, you know, the idea is to have this life-saving, a drug around as much as possible. And I wonder if we could rephrase it to be more like our AEDs. We do have staff who are on each site who are trained in AEDs, but they aren't on site all of the time. But we do have that technology available in all of our buildings all of the time. So perhaps that, I know that the training for dispensing this spray is not very lengthy. It feels, you know, probably easier than an AED. I could see possibly that we have it available for whenever the building is open, similar to our AEDs or bleeding control. And I guess that's all the testimony I have. If there's any questions specific to the Matsu, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. We have some questions, first from Representative Hemshute, then Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge, and through the chair, Dr. Traney, I'm just curious, when you said match it to AED, is that in board policy or is there a statute giving guidelines to AEDs? And I know the AEDs have, at least the modern ones generally have sort of instructions that, verbal instructions that activate when you're using the unit. So can you tell a little bit more about how you have AEDs and what we might do to match this to that?
Through the chair, and thank you for the question. As far as I know, it is in our board policy. I'm not sure if it's tied to a statute. And you are correct. Our AEDs are the modern AEDs that verbally walk a person through their use. So you could never have been trained in that. And then hypothetically, a layperson off the street would be able to administer that life-saving technology. I could imagine, although I'm not a health expert, that something similar could be done for the naloxone nasal spray. I don't know if the technology already exists, but it feels like if we can do it for a machine that can restart your heart, we could probably do it for something that could teach you to use a nasal spray.
Thank you. And for the record, we were joined by Representative Allard at 8:08 a.m. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Co-Chair Ruffridge, through the chair, do you keep these kits in the office or are they available in the hallways?
Yeah, through the chair, and thank you for the question. We currently keep them available in two places in most buildings. We have lots of schools of varying size. But in our typical larger schools, the nurse will have the kit as well as someone at the front desk. They are not currently out, similar to our AEDs, but I could imagine that that is something that we could do if it were put into statute, that would be something that we would be capable of having available to the public at all times.
Okay, follow up, please. And that's, I guess, yes, the follow-up. I was thinking along those lines, if they could be available to the public, and two examples that come to mind are fire extinguishers and automatic, what do they call it, external defibrillators. Is that something that's worth, how much do the kits cost, do you know?
Through the chair, I do not know what the cost, because so far they've been provided to us by the state. I believe Department of Health was instrumental in the first batch. Maybe all of them have come from the Department of Health, but we haven't personally purchased them yet.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bieber, you had something to add to that.
Through the chair, I talked to the Department of Health yesterday, and the two doses, a kit of two doses is $45 roundabout.
Thank you. And we'd also like to welcome Representative Johnson. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge. And welcome, Dr. Traney. Thank you for your testimony this morning. I am wondering if you see this as being covered by if something happened that possibly someone had a legal issue with, that all your current policies cover any sort of legal costs or ramifications.
Through the chair, thank you for the question, Representative. You know, we haven't looked at this specifically or run it by legal counsel specifically, but my hypothesis would be that because we have the AEDs and because we have our bleed control kits already available, that probably our insurance carriers would not have any significant concern with another life-saving technology that was available broadly to the public when the buildings were open. And then currently, because we have trained staff, we have checked on that portion already. Because we're providing the training while students are in the building, and there has been no concern with insurance coverage for staff being taught how to use this life-saving technology too.
Follow
up, please.
So it would be great, through the chair, Dr. Trainee, to just confirm that and let the committee know in case there's anything we would need to do in an amendment to any legal sort of issues that we might be able to take care of. Thank you.
Through the chair, I just had one more thing to add. Sorry. The Good Samaritan law actually protects citizens who it specifically has language for naloxone use. So I found that out. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Beaver. I was getting ready to say the same thing. You are allowed to attempt to save someone's life, and if their life is not indeed saved, you are not liable for their death. That is, and naloxone is included in that. Thank you. Representative Hemshue.
Thank you. through the chair, Chair Ruffridge. I do have one more question for Dr. Trainee, and Dr. Trainee, you've already expressed that there's a difficulty with the buses. I'm from Southeast. Where you live, it gets cold and stays cold. Would there be an issue, and I would welcome input from Representative Johnson's office as well, would there be an issue with a spray that freezes when it's left on the bus and then being unusable? You talked about other issues. I'm concerned about, like, is there some other thing that can be used that's not a spray that could be placed on a bus and stay there? The buses continue to be a bit of a problem.
Dr. Trainee?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. I can't speak to, the shelf stability of the drug. I certainly think that would be a question worth looking into. I'm not the health expert. I'm not sure what the particulars of that freezing or not freezing or how it would need to be stored in the conditions of a bus. We do have really big concerns with the bus portion. I think the concerns that you brought up are equally valid, but just the practicality of having our bus drivers who change buses all of the time. We have substitute bus drivers. They are not our employees, so we'd be relying on Durham to provide the training. I know it would come with some cost. I can't imagine what it would be. I'm sure we would have to negotiate it.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
I don't want to get ahead of myself or anyone on the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to be here again. And through the chair to Dr. Trainee, I appreciate all the concerns about the buses, and we've certainly taken that into consideration, and we're looking at an amendment that might take the buses out of the equation. So just to let you know that we're working on that, and we can find out certainly more about the shelf life or the stability of the kit.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any further questions for Dr. Trainee? Okay, seeing none, thank you so much for being with us this morning, and thank you for providing input and answering questions. Next, we will move to Dr. Getchell. Superintendent with the Haynesboro School District, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you so much, Chair Ruffridge. For the record, my name is Dr. Roy Getchell. I'm the superintendent of the Haynesboro School District, and I'm very pleased to be providing testimony today that's generally very much in favor of the legislation that's before you. I did some quick research last night because I knew I was going to be doing this today, and I found an article on the CDC website that really, I think we feel it. We hear about opioid deaths and concerns, but is there data to back that up? And it's absolutely true. You know, from 2019 to 2021, there was a 65% increase, and my guess is it's gone up since then. In my own community, we were touched by a death in our community from a really important community member and alumni. She was not in town or in school or anything like that, but it really rocked Haynes, you know, during that time period. So as a result, we worked really closely with the with DHSS and something called Project GAPE to be a part of a community-wide solution to put kits in our schools, but then also in, you know, around town. So that project has actual boxes that look similar to an AED, I guess you could say, that draw attention to it so that folks that are out and about, because we know that these things happen and folks they're not necessarily carrying anything with them, but if they're familiarized with an area that might have Naxalene or Narcan, that they could run and get that, because the data also shows that about two-thirds of these deaths are, there's a bystander theirs that could provide support. So we put a box down by our gym. We're a single-site school district. The reason that we did that is because we have so many activities in the evening, and we're not here. You know, I do have an open gym supervisor, but I never know, you know, who's going to be in and out in the evening. Plus, when we have big school-wide events and so forth, our gym is packed, and that is a likely event or place for this to occur. We keep another kit in the office just to be sure that everything is there in the event of an emergency during the school day, should that arise. But something I think that's important to point out is one of the goals of Project GABE is to make it just accessible. A challenge for us is being able to make sure that the contents of the kit are still there. It's not like an AED that doesn't typically just walk off. People don't go to an AED and get the contents and take it home because they're worried about something. You've got to have the whole thing there. The contents of these boxes are there's the potential that a student or a community member or somebody that's in open gym could have somebody that they're concerned about at home. Or maybe they're even concerned themselves. I don't always know that, but maybe they take that with them. And so we have to have it regularly checked, similar to, as Representative Prox pointed out, like a fire extinguisher or an AED as we check those. But that's done on a yearly basis and in coordination with DHSS and our public health nurse. I checked with our public health nurse in Juneau yesterday, and I think almost every district in Southeast is participating in this. And I think it's a very, very, you know, good program in the event of an emergency. I think it points, as we think about our youth, to just the importance of student activities. You know, that's a reason for kids to say no. That's a reason to keep them active and engaged and with adults and connecting with other folks. And I don't have data in front of me, but I'm sure that the likelihood of an overdose goes down when they're involved in that. But the evidence also shows the glaring need for mental health support. Like 40% of folks who overdose are actively in mental health treatment. We know how many students and parents and families are in treatment, but how many are not in treatment that need to be. So I think that in conjunction with preventative activities, this is a really important initiative for our schools and for our communities that with the same reservations that Dr. Traney has, because I do too, we do train all of our staff, but like I said, I can't be 100% assured that every single day the Narcan, our kits are stocked. I don't know who's taking it out or whatever that might be, so I'd want to see some limits of liability. I think the question about the bus is legitimate, because I know that you can't store these things outside. They have to be inside. So that would have to be either removed or part of a daily routine, which would be hard to keep up with substitute bus drivers and so forth, but where they'd have to take it as some sort of kit from inside out to the bus. So those are my questions, but in general, I'm very much in favor of the concept and appreciate the opportunity to collaborate as a school district to keep our school, our communities safe and healthy. So I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Dr. Getchell. Is there any questions, or Representative Hemshoot?
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Dr. Getchell, when you said Project GABE, it triggered a memory, and sure enough, Project GABE was created by the public health nurse in Sitka who lost her son. And so I've looked it up here on the Department of Health, and I remember the coverage when she created Project GABE, and it specifically works with the fishing industry and places kits on fishing vessels and in processing plants and that kind of thing. So I'd love to know more about how you're using it. And then I guess my questions might be for the Department of Health about the longevity of this program. So has Project GABE provided you the materials that you need for the Haines School District free of charge?
Yes. And through the chair, I'm sorry, Representative Henshute, yes, they have provided that for us, and they actually come and make sure, you know, like it's kind of on their checklist, and we keep up with that too. So when I go down to my boxes, you know, similar to a fire extinguisher, there's a sticker in there that shows that the public health nurse or somebody has come by to check on it on an annual basis. So they provided that. The beauty of it is it's in a highly recognized box that people, you start to notice it. You subtly start to notice it, or I do, and as people are trained, you know, around town, I notice when I see one. So I start to remember, oh, if I'm at such and such location, where's the closest box, where I could provide assistance if I found somebody that needed it? Because as I said, you know, two-thirds of overdoses have somebody that's accompanying them. So I think that not just having it on site and being visible, it makes it visible. So like an AED, probably all of you in the room there recognize when you walk by one really subtly. And if you had an emergency somewhere that was close by, you probably remember where it was. And that's what we've tried to do across our community, including our school district with the kids.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dr. Getchell. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge, and welcome, Dr. Getchell. This is Rep. Story, and I was wondering how aware you are of other single-site districts and smaller that they have across the state have similar partnerships and also have been as concerned as the Haines District has been and have at least one person trained to respond at all times to this crisis.
Through the chair, Representative Story, I don't have data on that. What I will say is that I did talk to our public health nurse who's in Juneau, who said that many school districts, if not all, I hate to say all because it may not be the case, but are involved either with Project GABE or there's Project Hope, I think is what it is. There's two through DHSS. So I believe that school districts in Southeast are. I'm not aware of it being statewide, although, you know, hearing Dr. Trainee's testimony, you know, it's, you know, my guess is it's likely, but it may not be coordinated among districts. But for us, it was really more of a community-based coordination, and this would be, you know, kind of adding on to that as schools across the state. But I would advocate for the, you know, I think the boxes are a huge help because it contains directions on what to do. It has stuff, you know, aids in there for CPR. It's right next to the AED so that you can provide, you could use that if that's necessary. There's many different things in that kit that would help besides the antidote itself in the event of an overdose.
Follow-up?
Through the chair, Dr. Getchell. So when this all happened, I'm assuming there was public education about it community-wide. And do you find that you need to do public education regularly about this, or how do you make sure the public and your staff is aware?
Yeah, good question. And I do think that it points to, and I've neglected to say this, but a question that I would have, you know, I've had a lot of support in Haines because this was a community-wide initiative, there's a lot of single site, either districts or schools, that may not have that same ability, or that they're going to have much different access to these kinds of things than I do here. So I think, you know, in speaking for rural districts, my situation may be very different than the challenges that are faced in much of the state. So I think that that's really important to note. But we were part of kind of a community-wide effort to put it forward. So it wasn't the school necessarily that did it, but we were a part of the solution within the community. But if this becomes a school initiative, that would be a very different thing. And so I'd have questions about that. You know, like I said, some concerns if I was in a small rural district that was very isolated, you know, making sure that, you know, I would have access, for example, if I was missing components of my kit or whatever. I don't know how that would work in very rural parts of our state to ensure that those are stocked on a regular basis. Although I think the effort is noble, I think we'd want to make sure that there's not legal ramifications because of the challenges that are faced to make this possible.
Paula?
Thank you, through the chair, for that, Dr. Getchell. I have a follow-up with the Department of Health.
They will be our next invited testifier.
Okay, I will hold my question till then. Thanks.
All right. Seeing no further questions or comments, thank you, Dr. Getchell, for being on this morning and providing some context. I appreciate you being here. Next, we have Teresa Welton. She is with the Office of Substance Misuse and Addiction Prevention. Please introduce yourself for the record, and I'm sure we'll have some questions. And if you want to provide some testimony as well, that would be great.
Good morning. Hello. And for the record, my name is Teresa Welton. I'm the manager of the Office of Substance Misuse and Addiction Prevention within the Division of Public Health. I appreciate the opportunity for testimony on House Bill 202, and I'm hoping to answer some of the questions raised at Wednesday's hearing, as well as today regarding naloxone. Naloxone, also known as the brand name Narcan, is a safe and effective medication to reverse an opioid overdose. It only works on an opioid overdose for substances such as fentanyl, heroin, and prescription opioids. It doesn't work to overdose of a cocaine or methamphetamine or sedative overdose. However, if it's used in those cases, it causes no harm whatsoever. The Division of Public Health has been distributing naloxone and training since 2017 through the Project HOPE program as well as the Project GATE program. Since that time, we've distributed over 70,000 kits statewide. We have partnered with 13 school districts in Alaska to supply them with naloxone. And however, we don't have the budget to supply all the schools and buses with naloxone. There's no age limit for being treated with naloxone. You can use it on a newborn with opioids in their systems or even a toddler who's been exposed to fentanyl patches. The nasal spray expires after 3 years. The freezing temperature is 32 degrees. However, if it is frozen, if it's warmed up, it can still be effective and used on someone in experiencing an overdose. The purpose of naloxone is to restore breathing to someone until emergency services can arrive. Situations vary as to how many opioids have been taken, as to how much naloxone is needed to restore breathing. A person can use multiple doses without harming the individual. Training for use of naloxone only takes approximately 15 minutes and includes how to recognize an overdose, how to administer naloxone, and to call emergency services immediately after. The training only requires an individual to be trained once. It does not need to be renewed. Naloxone is very straightforward and many citizens, including teenagers, have been trained on naloxone administration statewide. There's no minimum age to administer naloxone. The brand name Narcan is now available over the counter without a prescription and can be purchased for approximately $45 for a two-dose pack. Alaska's Good Samaritan laws currently protect individuals from liability while attempting to provide aid in good faith. A common concern to expanding naloxone access is that it acts as a safety net for people with addiction to continue their drug habits or to increase their drug use with no repercussions. Research has shown that no evidence that naloxone leads to more drug use. I am open for questions, and thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge, and welcome, Ms. Welton. Thank you very much for your work. My question has to do with your comment that you supply 13 districts with naloxone and that you do not have the budget to expand to all 54 districts. Can you tell me approximately what it costs for the 13 districts? And if it's possible that the Department of Health, through the opioid funding that we are now trying to disperse from this settlement, could go to an expansion for 54 school districts, and if you'd have the capacity to do that.
Through the chair, this is Teresa Welton. Thank you for the question. At this point, we supply Alaska Gateway School District, Aleutians East Bureau School District, Anchorage School District, Denali Bureau School District, Haynesboro School District, Juneau School District, Cake City School District, Kenai Peninsula Bureau School District, Ketchikan Gateway Bureau School District, Kodiak Island Bureau School District, Mount Sioux Borough School District, Sikta School District, and Yupik School District. I do not have the amount of cost we've used to supply the school districts. I can get you that answer at a later date. Our budget is funded by a couple federal grant programs. The opioid settlement monies are being decided by a steering committee, and I do not have an answer on what they will be authorizing the monies to be spent. So I don't have an answer as to whether they can cover the 54 school districts.
Follow up?
Through the chair, thank you for that. And if the money was available, do you have the capacity to work with all 54 school districts?
Through the chair, thank you for the question. This is Teresa Walton. At this time, we only have one staff member who handles the Project Hope program, as well as assistance with public health nursing to administer the Project GABE program. We work with many volunteers across the state. We have over 100 opioid response programs. We call them ORPs, who help them distribute on a local level as well as provide training. So at this time, it would be very difficult to expand it to all 54 school districts with the staff and the materials that we have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Ms. Welton? Representative Hemshute.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Ms. Welton, how difficult would it be for the public health nurses in place right now to ensure these supplies are available and updated? And, you know, I keep thinking it's kind of like what Dr. Getchell was saying, that if you have an opioid overdose emergency kit, like you might have a first aid kit or an AED on the wall, some of those materials might walk away from time to time. So could the embedded public health nurses across the state potentially go into schools from time to time, probably more than annually, and just check to make sure those kits are in place, or make contact with the districts to see if the districts need more supplies, looking for a way that the Department of Health could support the districts in making sure that these supplies are updated and on hand.
Through the chair, this is Teresa Welton. Thank you for the question. I don't want to speak for the public health nurses and their capacity to do so. However, they have been very instrumental in helping Project Hope distribute the kits throughout the state, as well as providing training. And in much of Southeast, they have been very effective in getting both the kits and the wall-mounted boxers distributed. And Project Aid did start with the fishing industry due to one of the public health nurses' son passing away from an overdose, and this is a passion of hers. And they've expanded it to the entire community, not just the fishing industry. So they put up boxes at schools, they put up boxes at libraries, at community centers. And many of the nurses throughout the state have done the same thing. And so they've been feet on the ground, so to say, as this program has expanded. But I can't speak to their capacity to continue and to expand to the 54 school districts. I would see it as an opportunity for the schools if they have an emergency box of naloxone on their wall, that they can easily order new kit supplies. We are getting a new inventory management system for the ordering of naloxone from the state. And they can also buy them, like I said, over the counter, so they can order the naloxone itself. The other materials in the kits and the wall boxes include gloves or face shields if doing CPR or fentanyl test strips. But the most important part of those kits and wall mount boxes is the Narcan itself. The Narcan can be used independently without anything else in the kit. And so, like I said, they can be easily ordered now that it's over the counter.
Follow.
Thank you, Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, just briefly, what is the reach of the public health nurses? Is there a public health nurse in every hub community? And I know I might be asking you to talk about a program outside your scope, but as much as you know, what's the coverage of public health nurses across the state?
Through the chair, this is Teresa Welton. Thank you for the question. I honestly, that is not my office. It's public health nursing, so I do not have the answer of where all they are. I do know they are in many hub communities, and then if there's an incident or an issue in a community that does not have a public health center, they have interim nurses that travel quite often. But I don't want to speak to something I don't know for sure, but I can get that answer for you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge. Through the chair, and I'm not sure who can best answer this, but I'm wondering who does the training for the school districts. I've heard that it's a 15-minute, very doable training, but is that someone that the school nurses do, or was that part of Project Hope, Project Gabe, where it's the public health nurses who do the training for the school districts?
Through the chair, this is Teresa Welton. Thank you for the question. The training, we provide the training to anybody who wants it, whether it be in person or virtual. We can also do train the trainers, which is what we've done with most of the public health nurses who do a lot of public education. We've done that with the school members, school nurses, administrators. We've done that with university students. The training is very simple. And to be honest, somebody can administer naloxone without training. It is a very, very simple thing to do. It's just the nasal applicator, and you put it in the nose and push the button. But the training is available online. And like I said, we do train the trainers. It's very simple. You don't need a certificate. You only need to be trained once. There's no renewal. It's not a complicated training.
Thank you. Further questions, comments? Seeing none. Thank you very much for being online this morning and providing testimony. That was helpful to have your perspective. I don't have anyone else here for invited testimony this morning. So I think back to committee questions or comments for the bill sponsor, and then final comments from the bill sponsor. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge. And again, thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this forward. I think what we've heard today, it's very doable what we want to do through this legislation, and really important to do. One of the questions I had, possibly it's an important one, is, you know, to make sure that all districts can afford the $45. I don't know if it was what each kid or is $45. And I'm wondering if we could approach the opioid settlement group and see if they have any plans to do something of the sort, or if it's possible to get money for the school districts for this.
Thank you.
Is that a question?
Representative Johnson. It felt like more of a comment to me as well, so I apologize.
Thank you. Yes, the intention is, before we get it to finance, to go through the funding sources through the chair, to Representative Story, go through the funding sources, and my intent is to look for the opioid settlement money, but we have some other research going on. I don't really want to speak to them because they're not completely settled yet as far as what the options are, but we have some confidence that we will be able to get the funding for it.
Thank you. Other questions, comments from committee members? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I just forgot her name, Johnson. Representative Johnson. There was some discussion earlier about school buses. Is that something that's worth pursuing further? My concern is, when you prescribe something in statute, you have to really think it through.
Through the chair, Representative Prox, we're looking at how we're going to take it out. I'm not entirely sure yet. We're looking at a couple of different routes. We do have a couple fixes in mind, just not settled on one yet either, really. Mm-hmm.
If I might add.
Yeah, Representative Johnson. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair to Representative Prox, it's a good point that the committee has brought up, and I think that we've looked at it, and we see where, you know, you've got all these multiple contractors. They're already, you know, have their, already have contract negotiations. I tell you, Matt Sue's contract negotiation with bus drivers is really difficult, and all the different changes. So it may be prudent to take that out, especially with the potential for having some stability of the medicine, you know, not necessarily there. But, and I'm thinking about this, even if it gets taken out, if there might not be a line that says something about school buses, just because I think one of the things that, you know, we get caught up in is the liability and the you know, having to have training and so on. And we lose sight of the fact that it's not a difficult drug to administer. It's a life-saving drug. And while you wouldn't want to, you know, give false hope to people, or, you know, some kind of false sense of security, even if they're on the buses and something were to happen, that might be something good to pursue, but if it may not be the time to put that in this bill, so but I might we're going to look at how we might at least leave something in there that would remind people to take another run at this maybe in the future. You know, you never know, something might change about the you know, the makeup or the formula that would make it easier, or even, you know, even I don't know. All it needs to happen is have one incident or two on a bus, which, and then people will take a second look at it. And I'm not saying that to be, you know, inciting kind of fear. I'm just saying that, people will take a second look, you know, potentially if need be. I have a lot of faith in the institution that when need be, if we can't do it now, that if it's a good idea, good time to might do it in the future.
Thank you. Follow up, Representative Prox.
Another one through the chair again, because we're putting something in statute. Have you talked to the Department of Law as far as liability? If an example that I'm going on, the outfit that I worked for quite a few years ago, we internally developed safety boards. We just had stuff scattered throughout the stations. And that was a wonderful idea. And then there came an edict that we had to make sure everything was up to date. And we got, well, why that? And the reason was if you dictate that something must be there and it's not there, then there is a liability associated with it not being there if needed.
So we do, through the chair to Representative Prox, we do have a memo, a legal memo from Legislative Legal that speaks about the Good Samaritan law as far as the liability of something not being on in the kit or in the school. I would say that that's probably the biggest concern that I would have isn't necessarily the, you know, how do we get something there, but how maintenance is always an issue. But you know, I don't know that we've investigated the liability if someone goes to get something and it's not in the kit, but we could, I would assume, I'm making this grand assumption and I'm going to, we'll look into the laws on it. The, if you go to the wall and the charger paddles don't work or something like that, that might be, a avenue that we can look at, you know, how you might address this. But I think, you know, I don't want to set anybody up for some grand liability, but I also don't want the perfect to get in the way of the good when we're talking about a safe drug and something that's getting it to the school districts, even without, you know, some kind of large amount of training, I think has a potential to save lives just in the fact that we're getting it to the school districts. And then of course, hoping that we will work out the piece here. And I mean, we're not just hoping because we're going to look at the research, but you know, how to do that maintenance. So it's always available. And I would like to ask the indulgence of the chair to do a small field trip since this is the education committee, if you happen to have time.
Field trip sounds fun. Representative Johnson, is that today?
Yes, if possible.
Oh, wonderful. yes, we'll discuss that. It feels like we had some other questions. Representative Hemshoot.
Thank you, through the chair. Since it has to be a question, I will ask if your office is aware of how willing my office is to help and how grateful I am to have this legislation. That's my question.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Representative Hemshoe, we are allowed to make comments in this committee.
In that case,
okay.
Through the chair, I guess, just like to express that I am really happy to see this. I do want to mention this is the fourth unfunded mandate this committee's considered this session. And so it seems like not a huge amount of money, but $45 for two. And then if those, you know, hopefully not get used in an emergency, but somehow disappear, then it has to be replaced. And if it's a large district, that starts to really add up. So I'm concerned about how to make it work, but I want it to work. So without even asking the question, I will just say, if my office can help, if we can talk through it, please stop by, and I'm happy to work with you on it. So thanks.
Thank you, Representative Hemshute. Representative Story.
Thank you, Co-Chair Ruffridge. I'm through the chair. Representative Johnson, there was public testimony today by the superintendents that the time frame of the school district being responsible to have a staff person there was a problem. And have you had any thoughts about how to work that out?
I have. I thank you through the chair to Representative Story. And I just also want to make sure that if my staff has done extensive research on something, that she may know more than I do on something. So a reminder that she can chime in and, and tell me to stop. It may be that that's not a possibility to have that at every school event. However, the intention is perhaps this would be something that coaches could be trained in, because coaches are oftentimes the people that are there at those after school events. But as far as this, you know, having, I guess somebody asked me, would this be something janitors were trained in? Well, I think, I guess we'll have to look at that a little bit more. But what I really think the most important thing is getting the kit there, getting it supplied, and then having some kind of, you know, and I'm not going to say a public relations thing, because I'm certainly not planning on having funding for a public relations thing in this bill, but the intent would be that people know about it. You know, we have our security staff here that goes around with their plate of cookies and gives a quiz on, you know, where are things at. And so I guess that's something that I think is definitely worthy of the conversation of how, you know, where is the kit kept? Is it in the wall? Is it in the nurse's office? If it's not in the nurse's office, if it's not in the principal's office, anyone, it doesn't have to be a nurse that goes and looks in the box and sees if the kits are in there. I mean, it doesn't require, you know, a specialized person to check what the supplies in the kit and so on, things like that. So there could be some things to examine on that. We'll take a look.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Do you have a follow-up, Representative Story?
Yes, one last follow-up. I know oftentimes in bills, when we have an intention that we'd like to have happen, but we might not want to mandate it at the time because of, like, the bus drivers, there's a lot to work out with the contracts. But I think about the language, like, each school district driver, to the extent possible or practicable, could be added to this language, even about having it to the community at off hours, because that way, as the school bus contract maybe comes on, each district would try and negotiate that into their contract. It's just some language like that, maybe a possibility to ask districts about to consider.
I think that's, through the chair, to Representative Story, I think that's a great suggestion.
Thank you. I do have excuse me, a comment as well. I think, yeah, Ms. Welton brought up an important point to remember. I think that this is great legislation, and just as a reminder for the committee, the amendment deadline for this is set for Wednesday, April 10th at 4 p.m., and so certainly be working on those things. But there is a level of just individual responsibility that can be taken for life-saving medications in this state. Last year, this body actually passed and signed into law an ability for people to have access to epinephrine and carry it on their person, another life-saving medication. As we heard from Ms. Welton, Narcan is available to individuals to go and get and participate in carrying on their person, as well as other sorts of things that can be easily managed and brought with you or stored in your office or things of that nature. So these are medications and equipment that are very easily accessible to the Alaskan public as a whole, and would be something to consider for members of the committee or people who might be listening, that those things are are accessible. And although could be put in your school, maybe they could also be put in your purse or backpack or car, or things of that nature. So I think we will afford an opportunity for closing comments from Representative Johnson, and then it sounds like we might take a brief field trip after we adjourn.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have just a couple comments, and then I want to make sure I give my staff a chance to add anything that she might have that she wanted to add as well. But I think one of the things that occurs to me that while we may think that in, and especially in the big five school districts, and a lot of those school districts are already taking, or they are taking, already taking similar steps that we already have these in a lot of our schools and our bigger places. And we've talked about the Project Hope, Project Gabe, and what a tremendous job some of the volunteers have done. And while we think about these things as being readily accessible, I just want to remind people that we are a very big state. And when you get outside of the hub communities in the bush, the schools really are the center of a lot of the activity. And there aren't a lot of pharmacies that are, you know, out here and there. So this may be the only way not the only way, but it may be a very good way to have this life-saving medication available in small towns throughout Alaska. And I think that that has a lot of validity just in itself. And I think there is the piece about making sure that it's not just created and then falls by the wayside, you know, and that there's a maintenance piece to it. So, you know, all those are good things that we need to dive into and make sure that we either put in the statute or we make sure through the administration that there is a recognized plan for how they're going to pursue this. But anyway, with that, I appreciate the time that you've afforded us here.
Thank you. Ms. Beaver, did you have any closing comments?
Through the chair, thank you guys for hearing our bill.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We will set this bill aside, and we will take it up again here at the next available opportunity. Again, amendment deadline is Wednesday, April 10th at 4 p.m. If there are no other items in front of the committee needing discussed, we will conclude the meeting of the House Education Committee. And the time is 8:59 a.m. The next meeting will be, I believe, Monday, April 8th at 8 a.m. The record reflect the time is 8:59 a.m. and we are adjourned.